So for health reasons, you could not consider voting, even though you probably would have had a pretty good chance of winning.
Obviously.
Now, Betty, on this, I noticed that there was a runoff, that the first vote I guess it must require two-thirds, because
it does require two-thirds. That's correct, it does. And so there were three caucuses running, so there was a runoff.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to go through that, too, you see?
And then on the runoff, she won by a fair margin here.
Oh, sure, because we picked up support from the other one of the caucuses, for their support. They supported us.
Now tell me what sort of attacks there were on her, first of all, being a woman, if that became an issue, and also being a lesbian.
Oh. The opposition, they put out the most filthiest cartoons and everything on the planet. It was just really terrible. And they just vicious shop talking things, you know.
And how about the issue of her being a woman? Or did that never become separate?
No, it didn't. Shame.
And you were saying that the women...
But we overcame that because I kept pounding at him and said, look, come down in here, I'm a woman. You know, what the heck, as far as that part goes. But, I mean, it's her private life. She didn't tell her private life. It didn't interfere with her life when she was a shop steward out there. Well, we didn't know about well, but she was a shop steward out there, okay? And she did her job as a recording secretary, didn't interfere with that, you know? And I'll give her a chance, damn it.
Did that become the key issue?
Oh, yes, to her being less than you bet. Because she'd never had a chance to prove herself as to her administrative abilities, and she couldn't even really file a grievance, so she had no record. Not good. Not good at all. But I felt, you know, and I really mean this now, because I didn't know her before, but I knew enough about her that I thought, well, darn it, I think she's sincere, and damn it, I'd help her all I could. Mm-hmm. And being on the executive board, you see, I could help her a lot, you know, even do administrative aid work, be classified as a... See, and I knew I had to retire. I knew I had to go out with a lot of disability. I knew I did, you know. See, and I knew that, but I was physically able to do, you know, I could help a lot and do, as long as I didn't have to punch a clock every day and walk on that doggone cement floor, you know, like I have to get back to that shop, I could make it all right, and I hoped that I could continue to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, how wonderful to have a woman be president. Isn't this great? You know, and she's young enough where she can get in there, and okay, by gosh, let's get in there and let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
I was will to death.
Now tell me how the region, Whipple, and how the international viewed her election.
Oh, the international, the region was really upset because after all, you see, I was openly anti, because I had more experience in all that stuff, but I joined that group, so then damn Betty Murphy down there, that group she belonged to, you know, they didn't really know Gail, they didn't know, you know, damn it down there, and then now the woman's president and everything else, you know, terrible, terrible, terrible. And see, after all, we were damn mad, and we were damn mad, and we're going to do something about it, and that's how we're elected. We're going to change all this control of the international up there. How dare them come down here and use our local, you know, to establish that 39th thing, but cost so many people who've been with this local, like myself, since 1942, and had worked so hard and paid dues and been out on strike and everything else, and been out on strike not once but two times, because see, that was my second strike in the same local. And to have the international do something like this, so, you know, we were there because we were going to change things. And the one way we could do it, like I told our people I was tracking, you'll hear on some of these tapes here, I told them, I said, now, by God, we'll get that Whipple. And the way we do it is, we run for office and we get elected, and what we do, we will see to it that he never holds his job again. And the way you do it, you run as delegate to the convention. When you go to the convention, you just vote him out. So he don't have that job anymore, okay? And so he knew we were a big threat. He knew we were a hell of a big threat. Because when he saw the election, you know, well, that's what they understand.
Mm-hmm.
So they were very unhappy. So after the election, after we were elected, now the procedure is, the international come down with the officers and take them, especially, you know, if you don't know anybody, if you're brand new, take them in the plant, introduce them to the manager of industrial relations, the director of employment, and this, and this, and this, and this, you know. They wouldn't do any of that. No way. They're going to let her hang out to dry. In fact, the bargaining committee that was elected never had any experience. There was two people on there who had some experience in the bargaining, but never on the bargaining committee. Never negotiated any. Nothing. Some of these people hadn't even been shop stewards before we got elected.
So it was really plain. It was a fresh start.
Well, we hoped, okay? So what I did, And this is when we're starting to hire for the BC panel. It was a big program building up, you know. So the company, as far as they're concerned, they just wanted to, they wanted to work with the local, because after all, you know, we had the steward structure out there, and that's where all the operation goes. So I took her in the plant, and I knew that a lot of these because I'd worked with them for years. I took her in and introduced her to this person, that person, this person, and then they introduced her to another. Finally, we got a thing going up, and I even, for a while, worked as coordinator of employment all during the hiring program, you know. We get a lot of applications and stuff from different agencies and seed and stuff like that, and I would go in and I'd negotiate with the company to hire people, you know, as a representative of Gail Paul, and I would go out and I would speak to different groups, you know, as a representative from a local union, and then I would sit in with Gail and talk to her about negotiations, try to teach her the processes and everything else, you know, and everything went just really fine there until, and of course for a while there, see, a lot of them felt, well, the hell with the international, the hell with the region. We'll get along without them. You can't get along without them. Because even though we're the certified agents in there, we're certified, you know, when we're elected going there and, hey, we're the representatives of the local union, you can't operate without that international. There's no way you can do it. So eventually, we had a compromise. Not compromise, let me say, because we didn't compromise. What we did, we had to finally recognize, and after we were elected, the international reps even used to have an office up there in our local union hall. We kicked them out. Changed all the keys. No way they're going to sit in their fat ass in there and not do anything and hurt our local members. The hell with it. They weren't going to sit in there and use our telephones and use our hall and hurt our members. Off they went. Them all out, boy. And finally, you see, when you have arbitration cases and things like that, you're supposed to have the international rep in. Well, so finally we had to have them come down. But we watched them and kept them on a leash, boy. They had to mind their business.
And your caucus was in total control.
Total control. Total control. And then we finally had to start meeting with the international rep, I mean, with Jerry Whipple and things like that. We kept him on a leash, like a dog leash.
How did you do that?
Well, if like an arbitration case or something like that, you know, we'd call and say, I wonder if you could send somebody down here on an arbitration case. We'd tell them what type it was and all that sort of thing, and we'd like to meet you in a conference room and so-and-so in our local union office, okay? And things like that. And then we had to have somebody certified as a pension representative, and in order to do that, it had to be done jointly by the international, too. They had to approve one of our members as a pension representative, so we had to, okay? And they wanted to badly, but we wanted to let them know, look, unless you, you know, straighten up and, you know, fly right, we don't want any part of you, but we're going to use you. We're paying your salary. But eventually, we had to start attending meetings up there in Los Angeles, the board meetings and the CAP meetings and things like that, you know, and eventually, and when summer school came around, it's just old politics. You select your people you want to send to summer school. And, of course, in summer school, then Jerry Whipple, you know, he goes down and he talks to me, tries to politic him back and forth and that sort of thing. So we eventually, and then he eventually started really doing a job for us as far as arbitration and servicing our local union. So after all, we're there, you got to use him. So then we let him come down and we got him. Yeah, we'd never give him an office again. No way. No way. And
so you really
tight control
the local.
Tight control the local.
Let me ask you, was there ever in all of this where, I mean, basically, here you had a dissident local from their point of view.
Oh, very definitely, yes.
Did IAM ever try and take advantage of that situation? And was there ever any threat for decertification or anything
no,
like that?
No, never. They never tried to raid him. No.
Mm-hmm.
They never did. The only time we had any indication that might happen is this last election, when Bob Berkoff, after the strike, he wasn't even here during the strike. He was working up in Northrop, I believe it was, because he didn't have much seniority.
Northrop?
Yeah.
Well, Northrop's non-union.
You are right. It's non-union. He went up there to work, and so he got a pretty good job there, so he stayed there. And during our strike, you know, a lot of our people, you know, we did various things besides picketing and everything else. We're constantly trying to organize that place up there, and Marty First was sent up there one time to help organize, and Bob Berkoff come out to the fence, and Marty says, hey, he's on a membership card, he says, how about helping us try and stop the people in there, and so Berkoff took the card, and he says, the hell with it, threw it in the ground. He's the guy for president of the local union now. What kind of a union person is he? Talking about a political opportunist. Anyway, so
things were going along pretty well there.
Well, we started working because, you know, I knew it would have to be, but I'll tell you, in the meantime, we'll let them know, look, you don't pull any of that stuff here, because we got an executive board, and we'll vote on that, and we got a membership, and we'll keep them informed.
And since you had so many new people, you were obviously trying to know who, how did you handle the training of all of these new people? Were you doing that all, or was there a program set up for training?
Are you talking about the leadership?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, now the international, you know, they have like their summer schools, and they have different workshops and things, and so we would send our people to them mm-hmm. because some of the information was pretty good. As long as we had an experienced person go along to see who wasn't trying to politic them to get them to, you know, come convention time, vote for him. And so we made use of that, and we also set up educational committees in our, you know, and had seminars and things like that in our own local, mm-hmm. in our own local, we did. Spirits classes, mm-hmm. and to teach them how to file grievances, mm-hmm. and to teach them the contract, go over, you know, article by article, paragraph by paragraph, you know, how to represent the people properly, all that sort of thing. Unfortunately, some of the people that were elected to the bargaining committee would never have made good stewards even. Mm-hmm. Some of them just didn't have the capacity, you know. And some of them, you know, after all, it just wasn't the best.
Mm-hmm.
The bargaining committee was not the best. Now, I found out that after Gail really worked hard, and she really did it. She was, for the first 6 months in office, you know, I could see that she was hanging tough, and she was doing a good job, and no problem. After 6 months, we had a recording secretary was a male, and we had the assistant editor male, and as another of a chairman of the Stewards Council male. They were more or less these kind of guys that wanted, like, we call them lost time artists. They're not legally supposed to be out in lost time. They're not contractually covered by to be a full-time job. But they were more or less giving Gail bad advice for some things. So the chairman of the Stewards Election Committee had been around about 10 or 15 years, and he was a lot of people might consider him a lounge lizard, you know, just one of the, I have other names for them. I wouldn't even tell you because your ears are too nice and gentle, and you're a sweet little girl, okay? But in my heart, that's what they are, too, I agree. Anyway, they were starting giving her this advice, and then all of a sudden, the power of what she had, the office she had, started going through her head. No, I found it much more difficult for me, and my office used to be right straight across from hers. And if ever I see some things going on, I'd try to warn her, I'd get on the phone maybe and warn her. Even if I could see from my office to her somebody who was trying to give her a bad time, I'd just gently get on the phone and call her, and then she'd take care of it. You know, later on I'd talk to her privately, always privately, okay? Because I really cared. I really liked her very much, really, you know? And but then eventually she started resenting it. There was one time when she wanted to put an ad in the air scoop for the dentist. And I said, well, you can't do that because, you know, we're not allowed to advertise for any dentist, doctor, or whatever. I said, because it's against the Constitution and the international. We have a minister of letter out telling you must not do that. I said, immediately people are going to think you're getting kickback. Well, it turned out she was. The gal she was living with got about $3,000 of dental work free. And then there were some other things came up in the air scoop that weren't supposed to be, and I talked to her about that. And I said, Gail, you just can't do that. Well, she didn't like that. And then I heard there were some other things that come back. The current secretary got this and got that for certain little things done, and I didn't like that. So eventually what happened is that she wasn't listening anymore, and she wouldn't want to talk about things anymore. And so but when the time came, you know, we have our executive board meeting. Now, it just so happened this last election, our whole slate, you saw people, our whole slate, you know, right? They were unhappy with her, too. The Mona Hart and Dan Young, who was the vice president, he was some of the things that she was doing. It was very bad. He would be really unhappy about it, and she would all of a sudden wouldn't take him into her confidence. Mm. And she wouldn't let him serve as vice president even. Then it was just really bad. And
now,
the guy,
did she align herself with some other people?
No, within her caucus.
She
wondered, she was caucusing a caucus. She was pulling out some of the people from our caucus, you know, that agreed with some of the things she was doing, and she was withdrawing herself from divorcing herself from people like myself that really cared and were trying to help, and, you know, she didn't want a no vote on anything, okay? No vote on anything. So here we were. I never will forget one time when she was real angry at me. I think it was right after I talked to her about that dental bill being paid, you know, there was a no-no, and and we came into executive board meeting, and here was the recording secretary said that we have a recommendation from the president for people to serve on the committees. All those in favor say aye. In other words, the appointments and everything, you know, which some are powerful committees. And I said, well, wait a minute. Who are these people? Well, the president recommends them. I said, I want to know who these people are. Because at that time, For one thing, I wanted to become active in the Women's Committee because, you know, I thought we should activate the thing. I've been doing it for so long. And I thought I would have...
At that point, the Women's Committee had not...
I was chairman of it then because she did appoint me, and I said, okay, I want to build it up, you know. Mm-hmm. But I told her, now, Gail, I'm becoming so involved in the political action that I will resign as chairman, and let's put some younger girls in there to kind of get them active. And great, but I'll help them all I can, though, you know. And because I'm becoming more active in the political action, I won't be able to organize the thing, you know. So she said, okay. But anyway, she didn't want to know who these people were. I said, well, I'm not going to vote for it. I vote no against it because I don't know who I'm voting for. Oh, she wouldn't talk to me for 2 months. And that's why I might have voted for the people had I known who they were for, because, you know, you want to have people that you know are doing well and all that sort of thing. You had women and men and different nationalities on there, balanced and everything else. She didn't know a lot about that stuff, Yancy. Anyway, we had a lot of problems. And Dan Young, boy, she throws him out completely. In fact, when it came time for convention, he went with the rap people. And he went with the rap, and so did Mona Hart. Mona Hart went before that. They went out of caucus. A lot of people left the caucus because it was so bad. They were disagreeing with things she was doing really bad. She was allowing so much lost time out there. It was costing the locals so much money and all, and it was going in the red and different things. And just people would agree with her. She'd pay them, no matter. Very bad. So they left the caucus. They did. And I was real unhappy. I kept hanging in there, you know. And she got so unhappy, she didn't want me to use the office right across from her because I could see things were going on, and she didn't like that.
Now, and at that point, your position was as executive board at large?
Executive board at large. And although I did a lot of administrative aid work, you know, and then I was also, you see, and by that time, of course, I'd retired, you know, and I was recording secretary of the retiree chapter, and I was secretary to the political action committee, which is a lot of the work, you know, which is great. And then I was also, delegate to, well, for political action, the Democratic Party and all that. Mm-hmm. So I did a lot of that, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I had a lot of things going. But anyway, what happened was finally is that the vice president went back in the shop. And boy, she just, when he went back to the shop, she emptied his, anyway, he decided he was going to support Jerry Whipple. Well, she was still very much against Jerry Whipple, and we were going to support somebody from the North. Well, we still try to support everybody from the North. Regional director, because time came for convention to elect a regional director, okay? Finally, the time came, we were going to get that Whipple out of there, okay? So we went in there, and so Dan Young and Mona Hart, they went with, and a couple other people, went with the rap people, you know, and the rap, when we had the election for delegates finally to go to the convention, you know, team we ran ours, another state ran theirs, and the rap ran their slate. Bob Burkoff, in the meantime, came back in the plant, you know, and he ran for shop steward, but he couldn't qualify because you had to be there 90 days before you could run for shop steward. They called me in as a witness because I had testified that back in 1947, first time I held office, you know, I hadn't been back in the plant 90 days from Santa Monica, although I was a UAW person, and I had to be there 90 days before I could run for shop steward anyhow. I remember these things. See, okay, so Burkoff, anyhow, he got back in the plant. We didn't run for office, but he got his machine going. And he got all the young people that were hired in for the DC-10, all the young people. You know, and he told them how awful the old people were, and they had a lot of money for marijuana and booze, and he really had a caucus, and he had a machine going in that plant that you wouldn't believe. When the time came for the delegates' election to the convention, every single one of their people were elected, every single one, including two of the biggest, strongest leaders in that caucus were the two that left ours, and they kept one immediately because Gail quit me very badly, very, very badly.
Betty, you could say anything, and then on the transcript, you could take anything out that you
okay. want. But some of the things that she did, I just, I heard inside, a lot was personal, but a lot of it, I heard inside to think that we came so far organized, and we gained so much, and the thing that hurt me, too, is the fact that she was a woman, and it was just... My God, it just killed me, you know. See, I thought, if only I had a chance like that when I was her age, oh, how wonderful that would have been, you know.
See, what do you see as the big problem there? Why she was...
Well, at first, you know, I was very careful. I thought psychologically, I tried to put myself in her place, and I thought, well, now here's an old gal up there. She's been here a long time, and I got to be careful so that she doesn't think I'm trying to tell her how to run her job, you know, or be like an old busybody mother or something, or after her job. I didn't want to be like a threat. Mm-hmm. So I tried very carefully. I had to get acquainted with her, mind you. I didn't know her, you know. I didn't know her. And so I'm not sure exactly what it was. I want to say that, you know, I feel that she's gotten the position she did because she was she got bad advice. She got bad advice from these men who were using her, really, because they did their own 3 years up there. So they didn't have to work. They got paid, and they didn't have to work for anything, you know, and they gave them all these freebies and these trips and everything paid for and stuff like that. She'd appoint them, you know. And so, and then again, too, you know, I truly think that she might have had in her personal life a problem, too, where, after all, you know, being a president of the local union, there's a lot of status. And she was wanting to be, you know, very nice in the eyes of her mate. And without the problems that way, and in her own world, her lesbian world, you know. And I tried not to get too close to her, so I didn't want to know about a lot of things. Because that's her lifestyle, fine, okay? But I want to know, I'd be there, I know I helped a couple times, she's sick, and she had to go to the dentist and stuff like that, and then when her mate was going to have surgery, and they found she was malignant cancers, and I tried to help that way, but, you know, I'm not part of that world. Mm-hmm. So I just didn't want to get into it too much, you see? Okay? But, and I'm worrying right now, like I said, you know, I feel sorry for her because I'm afraid that it's just going to be devastating for her. I think right now she's trying to prove with that little girl that she can still take care of everything else and you know, that she's still a big macho or something, and she's just going to destroy her. Isn't that a shame?
Now tell me, so at the same time this was happening, finally the Women's Committee getting itself organized. Tell me about
that. Well, so what Gail tried to do, she had some good plans, and boy, I was supporting my recreation committee, because many years back, I showed some pictures and things, recreation committee that we organized, and we did it on our own time, didn't cost the local committee, local union any money. In other words, we get off work, we come over to the hall, we had bowling leagues, and we had baseball teams, we had the Boy Scouts, we had things, and the girls' social thing, all sorts of stuff, but we did it all on our own time. Well, Gail was trying to build up this political machine in the plant, so she thought, well, we got this beautiful hall up here. We can have basketball games in there. We can, you know, and we can have, we got pool tables in the back. We can have different things there. But she would bring people on off time. In other words, excuse them from the plant, pay their wages that day. And it got to be way, way, way out of hand. And at first I supported it, and I thought it was okay, but then when nothing was happening, when they come out all day long, I mean, they sit up around the hall and be there for a couple hours and leave, and then maybe just come back at 3:30 or 4 o'clock, so they weren't really earning their money. And there weren't that many people coming out and participating. That was the bad thing, see? You know, it was very bad. And then that's for the Recreation Committee.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now, so for the Women's Committee, and after all, she's part of the gay movement, and you know, all sorts of things. So what she did, there's a couple of gals that apparently, and they were new hires, officers, you know, off the street, so young gals, and they approached her about the ERA and all that. So she thought, well, hey, I'll put them on the Women's Committee, and I didn't know too much about it, and she never asked for approval on it, anyway, but she put them on it.
Well, who was the chair of the Women's
Committee? She's the guy you talk to. They're long since, they're long gone, of course.
Okay, we can insert that later.
Yeah. In fact, you know, in fact, after that big banquet we had and everything else, and the company was complaining about one of the girls there. She's passing out socialistic literature and everything else. We found out that they both part of the Communist Party. They both were members. Both the girls were. And they were both out here, sent out here. One was from the South, and the other one was from the East. And boy, the company came down hard, you know, on us on that one.
Now, these were the two who were appointed for the
Women's Committee.
Was it the Social Workers Party? Was that what they were members of?
Yes. And
now tell me then about the committee and what they were
going to
do and what you thought about what.
Well, for instance, I thought it was great because they were taking part in the RA marches and things like that. And that's great. You know, that's the reason I resigned as chairman, because we needed some young girls in there and to get in there and really build it up. You know, and go to these different rallies and meet with coalition with the other unions, you know, for women's rights, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Great, you know. And both these gals were very intelligent gals. And they were well-educated, and they're well-educated, too. And just fantastic, you know. And I liked what I saw to start with. But when she decided to put on this big banquet, you know, which was just great, and I think it was going to be for $5 or whatever, you know. And but there wasn't that much interest in the shop of the women.
That's what I was going to ask you.
There was not.
How much were they building a constituency of women from the shop and the women's committee?
Well, you see, by that time, you know, the women were represented by women. I mean, the women that were representatives, you didn't look at them as just women. They represented men and women. That's how they got started in this thing anyway. So the women didn't have too much of a problem because we had coverage in our contract, you know, this is equal work for equal pay, you know, and you had a seniority agreement. And hey, baby, if you could do it, you know, you had a seniority, just because you're a woman, you by God had a crack at that job. And by that time anyway, you see, even if there was a weight involved, you know, why, heck, I proved many years ago, because being a lead man, I could do a lot of things, help my union activity, because I'd say, wait a minute, you're saying that I can't have a woman classified as an A because she can't lift that over there? I said, wait a minute, I called one of my men over to an A. If you had to go over there and lift up that so-and-so, would I ask you to, no, not that, sending somebody with me, but you always have two men do it or whatever. Always, you know. So we worked up to a point where really and truly, the women were not that much realizing they had a problem, okay? Mm-hmm. Not really, as far as the women in the shop were concerned. The only thing that we hadn't really done too much about that we wanted to is that we had a lot of working mothers, and they were having problems, you know, with daycare, that sort of thing, you know? And also, you know, having to be absent because of taking care of problems at home and things like that. That was a problem, you know. But then again, to the international, they were interested in fact, as a part of a contractual agreement, that provision, that the company would jointly with the union, you know, establish daycare centers, you see? And so I thought that's another thing I wanted to get into. That's the reason why I want to be a women's committee, too. I wanted to have a part of that and get it started. Mm. Because it was tough, you know. I had raised a kid, and it was tough.
Wait, now this was something that you wanted to introduce the next time.
That's right. Uh-huh. Well, this last time. Mm-hmm. You know, we did. We got an agreement, the staff contract, you know, we did. The company agreed to a daycare center. In fact, the UAW has two in the United States. Already set up, one in St. Louis and one in Florida, I believe.
And it's jointly paid for by the company and by the union?
It's paid for totally by the company, but the union has a responsibility in it. They finance it, but then we'd have to help them with it, you know, see? And the only thing that's stopping establishment of it right now, there are some legal problems on insurance liability and things like that in Long Beach. And I was checking yesterday. I was into that yesterday. How come we haven't moved? And I was talking to the national rep yesterday.
This is what in the 80 contract got
78.
The 78 contract you got it. I see. Because you were telling me that the women basically the only.
No, I mean.